that's beautiful. I'm feeling so redeemed, I should say, to our listeners of Resonance 104.4. This is The Truth About Markets. I'm Max Kaiser. I'm here with Stacy Herbert. Every week we come to you with this show into your home, into your car, into your mind, and we try to tell you about something. It's a big problem developing out there in the world. It's got links to the global ecological crisis, but it's bigger than that. If you can imagine a problem bigger than the ozone layer being depleted and the CO2 emissions covering the earth with a blanket of carbon dioxide that's choking everyone to death, and all the fish are missing, coral reefs are dying, and the forests are being clear-cut for matchsticks and chopsticks. Yes, it's a bigger problem than that, listeners to Resonance 104.4 FM with Max and Stacy, Truth About Markets. All I have to mention is one word, two little syllables, to put the fear of God into you. A fear, a lightning bolt of pain driving down your spine into your coccyx, up back to your brain, exploding in a kaleidoscope of financial ruination. That word is Revco.
Revco, what is this? This is a giant hedge fund. What do they facilitate hedge funds, don't they? They provide liquidity. They write the contracts, derivative contracts. And folks, you people out there in London, Max Kaiser is the single only voice in London for the last year who has told you, watch out for these weapons of mass financial destruction, these derivatives. These are the ones, this is what is going to destroy us.
Mm-hmm.
You've said this on The Truth About Markets.
Mm-hmm.
You've said this in The Ecologist magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And you've said this on stwr.net. So you have warned, you have been the lone voice in this wilderness of the city of London.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like it's about to happen. And this is really, really important for you out there in London, because this is going to affect everything. What's happening with Revco?
Well, you know, this falls under the heading of the big chill as markets freeze up. Revco is a dealer. They deal in all kinds of financial flora and fauna. They're a broker, basically. They service hedge funds for sure by lending them money and doing transactions, as do all the banks, the big banks in the city and on Wall Street. That's a big source of their profits over the most recent years, by lending money to operators of funds who use that borrowed money to speculate in various world markets. This is what a hedge fund does. A hedge fund is just a big pool of speculative capital. It's different than your average mutual fund, because your average fund or mutual fund is somewhat plain vanilla by comparison. They have a couple of strategies. They might buy FTSE 100 stocks and then wait around and see whether those stocks do any good. Whereas a hedge fund is more of a mercenary type situation. The managers have unlimited, virtually unlimited access to credit. They can engage in any strategy. They're guerrilla warfare. It's the guerrilla warfare end of the financial business, where you've got smart people, so-called, hacking their way through trillions of dollars worth of derivative products, looking for little opportunities and arbitrage spreads that they can exploit for their benefit and their shareholders' benefits. But what's happened, Stacy, and this is, I think, let's take a step back and look at the big picture here, because Revco is part of the immediate problem, but there is the bigger picture to look at. The bigger picture to look at, to get an idea of the scope of the problem that we're talking about. And the reason we say this is bigger than the problems facing the world's ecology and the world's atmosphere and oceans is because this problem is literally 4 or 5 times bigger than planet Earth itself. How do we come up with that number? Well, there are $250 trillion worth of worthless paper floating around the world's financial systems.
It's like IOUs, basically.
That's right, that's right. $250 trillion worth of IOUs that are being traded amongst banks around the world right now. The total value of those trades, by the way, and if you one trader trades one piece of paper to another trader who then trades the same piece of paper to a third trader, of course, that's two trades, isn't it? If you add up all the trades, you end up with $900 trillion worth of trades over the past 12 months of these IOUs. Now, planet Earth itself has a global GDP, or output of just under 40 trillion. So how 40 trillion goes into 250 trillion how many times?
Six.
So the amount of IOUs that are collateralized by natural resources is six times greater than the natural resources themselves, that being planet Earth. So as, remember the tsunami disaster on Boxing Day, where they wiped out 200,000 people because of the huge wave that came crashing onto the shores in the Indian Ocean. This is a financial wave of bad IOU paper suddenly finding its way back into everyone's life. And it could kill, I think, a minimum of 200,000 people. I think it could certainly make homeless several times that factor. We're talking about making millions of people homeless, just millions of people homeless due to sudden seizure of assets and sudden freezing of financial markets. See, REFCO, now let's look at REFCO. REFCO is part of the one of the little ripples that turns into a tsunami out there developing in the financial oceans. And REFCO is a company that is in the business of perpetrating the huge tsunami of IOU cash that's floating around and bursting and getting ready to crash onto everyone's bank account. REFCO, which is a company valued at, when it was went public in August, something like $3 billion.
Yes, $3.4 billion.
They've had to freeze all trading. Well, this is why we call this the big chill. All trading at REFCO has been frozen.
So that means there's no liquidity. You can't cash out. You can't trade.
That's right. If you've got money in REFCO right now, you're sitting there and you can't do nothing with it. And this is going to have a knock-on effect throughout the financial globe where the solution, and this is where people are going to find this whole thing quite startling, the solution is not to sit down and figure out where the accounting is and how do we get this thing straightened out, which has been the experience for financial scandals in the UK recently. The split cap, I think it was called, the split cap funding crisis. Values are marked down and people sit around and they figure out, well, who owes who what. This is different. This is where the markets stop. They come to a full stop. There is no money coming in. There is no money coming out. I was working on Wall Street back in 1987 during the crash of 87. And for 3 days, you couldn't get money in or out. So if you own stock in IBM and IBM dropped 30, 40, 50 points, if you owned IBM, you couldn't sell it even if you wanted to. There was no action happening at all. And this is what we're seeing, but obviously on a much bigger scale than the mere stock market crash of 1987. This is a global liquidity crisis and financial crash on a magnitude not yet seen here on this planet. You know, I mean, we have to use planetary, use the planet's overall economy to give the size and scope and measure of what the crisis is. And we have said before in this show, just a couple of weeks ago, that if someone from another planet showed up here and was interested in buying planet Earth, how much would they get for it? Well, if you add up the assets and liabilities for planet Earth, you would quickly discover that planet Earth is in an insolvent position. It's got many more IOUs and debts than any assets to underwrite those debts, and it would be worth nothing. It's a worthless planet.
And so this situation occurred all for fees, and basically, you know, hedge funds have traditionally, up until just recently, you've basically had to be a Class A, a top investor. You had to have $2 million in cash because you know, they warned you that we're unregulated only because you are signing this paper saying we could lose every single one of your pennies. There's no guarantee like traditional funds and pension funds have to provide. I mean, they can't just lose all your money.
Right. Up until recently, hedge funds have been available to, well, in the U.S., it's called Reg D,
yeah.
Regulation D. These are people with a minimum net worth of $1 million. And these are private investors, and you bring people into the fund, and they sign a paper that says they won't try to take their money out for a period of time, and that they realize that this is high-risk investment. What's happened recently, as you point out, is it's become a mainstream product where hedge funds have been resold as funds of funds, where they take a bunch of funds and they repackage it as a new fund. Just this week in the Financial Times, it was reported that there's a bond coming out collateralized by hedge funds. They're becoming a retail product for hedge funds, which is what has led to the incredible mountain of IOUs, which a hedge fund is basically trading in IOUs. There's no there. There's no assets that are being, there's no hard assets if you were to, because the whole financial business has morphed into this gigantic global Ponzi scheme where it's just a matter of trading paper back and forth while the music is playing. But once the music stops, there's no chairs for all the people who are trading this worthless paper. And the music is stopping, and people are finding that their accounts are frozen. And when they do finally reopen those accounts, they're going to say, well, we had to mark to market the value of the paper in the account, which is zero, if they're lucky. If not, they may actually get a bill that say, you owe us double what you put in, because we figured out, in fact, that the debts are, we're going to pass a law making you responsible for the debts, which is the way capitalism used to be in this country, in the UK, back in the 16th, well, what century was it? When corporations were first introduced in the UK, the investors were responsible for the debt. It wasn't until later that they made the investment in the corporation the extent of the liability of the investor. But I wouldn't be surprised if they go back and say that the investor is responsible for all the debts too. And add on top of that, your mortgage debt and your credit card debt.
Yeah, but the one other thing I wanted to say. So these hedge funds have been running around crazy, especially in the last 5 years, with all of this excess liquidity. The Fed, you know, Alan Greenspan and the U.S. Treasury have been just printing money, creating money. So there's been a lot of cash. And with this cash, these hedge funds have been running around the world seeking returns of 20-30%. And as we see, they were only getting that because Warren Buffett warned everybody, you can only get these kind of returns if you're lying. And, of course, it's turning out that way. But because, you know, they have their special group of risk, you can't hide from risk. We all share it. Because even if you were just like a 60-year-old woman about to retire, you've had all your money safely in some bank, these guys running around seeking their own fun and returns and these alpha males have destabilized the entire system and are going to take down everybody's income, everybody's pension fund as a result.
That's true.
So what I'm saying is, like, the investors in these hedge funds had to sign some form saying they recognize the risk. But what about the rest of society? Were we able to sign a form saying, okay, we'll let these guys operate in our financial system?
Right. That's a good point. The creeping up of this debt pile in society has gone unnoticed.
Yeah.
If people had a more of an understanding of what's been going on for the past 5 or 10 years, they would be more concerned. But, you know, ask 10 people in the world what a hedge fund is. Ask 10 people on the street what a hedge fund is, and 10 people will say they have no idea. Ask people anything about finance, and very few people have any idea what's going on. And they tend to think that it's not really their concern. But now that these markets are seizing up and there's no liquidity, and the banks are going to be in deep, dire difficulties, of course, it then becomes everyone's business, and then they want to know what the problem is. Well, the problem's been building up for years. We've been talking about it on this show for a long, long time. But people just don't want to, as you say, the risks have been building up, and now they're breaking open. And who's going to be responsible for this? Well, this problem is much too big. It's a total breakdown of the system of debt creation and trading in a way that is threatening the very planks of civil society. I say this now, you know, perhaps in 2 weeks' time that statement will appear prescient, or it'll appear a bit too far-reaching. But I think that either it's this week or next month, the amount of debt that's built up in the system that's now having to find a home without a home to return to is going to cause epic depression-like collapse in value that nobody is prepared for, except listeners to this show, the truth about markets, of course. But you look at a company like Goldman Sachs. You know, Goldman Sachs, we talked about Goldman Sachs on this show a couple of weeks ago, and they said they reported huge earnings. for the quarter, and we said it was highly suspect that they could report such huge earnings for the quarter because they're the and no business can report that amount of profits without taking, you know, undue risks or even engaging in activities that are not really straightforward. As Warren Buffett indicated, you know, if you're making a lot of money, chances are above many multiple amount of money on the rate of inflation, the chances are you're engaged in some backhanded dealing. So we made that suggestion about Goldman Sachs, and sure enough, it turns out that Goldman Sachs is one of the banks involved in the initial public offering of Revco back on August 11th. And it turns out that Goldman Sachs now allegedly has committed fraud because they failed to do their job because they were more interested in the short-term fee than the interests of the community in which they operate. Now, U.S. Attorney Bennett...
No, the U.S. Attorney, you know, it's the U.S. Attorney. It's like the Home Office.
Yeah.
So the U.S. Attorney has said that Philip Bennett, who is the CEO of Revco, defrauded investors in the initial public offering. He's saying he lied. Wow. Well, obviously he did, because this guy personally claimed it was a loan to him, this $430 million loss that he failed to tell investors about. He failed to tell Goldman Sachs, apparently. But how on earth Goldman Sachs could not have noticed, who knows? Or Grant Thornton, which I guess is the auditors. None of these people noticed. Only 2 months ago, this company went public. All the investors, you know, pension funds, everybody invested in it. It popped 25% that day. And now it's down 75%.
Look at the names on this list. It's a real rogues gallery of our banking system. Citigroup, J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, Credit Suisse, First Boston. You know, we've been saying these banks are in the business of tearing down society and the ecology. And now, by issuing these highly toxic derivative products, and it's hard, again, for listeners to imagine how a financial product can be toxic. Well, now we know how it can be toxic, because when it's revealed that the value is zero and the market sees up and are illiquid and you have to declare bankruptcy and they're coming after you because they sold off your mortgage to some Chinese creditor and who's now working for a communist country who thinks nothing of stringing you up and beating you to get the repayment back on the mortgage or the credit card, you're going to ask me, Max, why didn't you warn me about this? And I'll say, from my Shanghai retreat, I did warn you about this. But you didn't listen because you thought it was more important to go down to Tesco and stuff your face than to take care of your society by trying to put a curb on these financial no-goodniks. And speaking of Tesco, shall we move on to some Tesco news?
Yeah. Let's do this.
Well, in the UK, there's a big Tesco campaign going on. People don't like Tesco in the UK, even though one out of $8 spent in the UK on the retailing side goes to Tesco. A lot of people don't like Tesco because, well, for one thing, as we talk about on this show, they are contributing to wage deflation in the UK. And you see that in the UK, the news out in the past couple of days was there's a slowdown in Britain.
And if you could see Mervyn King's face,
yeah,
and the hands on the forehead, he doesn't look happy. Basically, he said that the economy is becoming more volatile, and I think he said this just as Revco was announcing their losses, but before they suspended trading. So he's saying the economy is becoming more volatile, and that people are going to have to accept that there's the last 10 years was bliss, and it was false stability, really, because it was all housing boom and consumer boom, and that's why... Created with cheap money, the same cheap money that caused the Revco sort of situation.
People say, well, you know, we never saw it coming. That's not true, because if you had the cost of money reflect the environmental and ecological costs that these companies are inflicting on the environment, the money would never be as cheap to begin with, and you wouldn't be in this situation. By ignoring nature, by ignoring your environment, by ignoring reality, you create an artificially low price for money, which creates a flood of money, which is now coming back to boomerang on the UK economy, and in a way that's going to really cause a lot more suicides in this country than there already are. You see, in the UK, they've got their first instance of an internet chat room suicide pact. Mm-hmm. You know, I talked to this guy over at the Ecologist about this a few months ago, and I said, oh, you know what? The suicide pact trend is going to make it to the UK. And he was like, no, in Japan, you know, people in Japan are different. It's Asian, it's Japan. They do that stuff they'll never do in the UK. Well, guess what? Now it's in the UK. People are meeting on the internet, deciding to get together and commit suicide together. Why? Because their environment and their ecology and their finances are a shambles because of people like Mervyn King and Alan Greenspan that have kept interest rates artificially low for so many years. That's killed the environment, killed society. Put people like laughing hyenas, Blair up there in office, who just grin and go, I'm George Bush's puppet. Gordon Brown mumbling about the golden rule. He's taking a golden shower on everybody in the UK. The man is completely irresponsible. And who's out there? Charles Clark is in the America trying to rev up this notion about throttling back all civil rights and free speech laws to keep his cronies happy working at these companies like Tesco. Tesco's no good. Let me tell you about Tesco. It's no good. As Mervyn King says, jobless claims in the UK are on the rise. Wages are going down. Well, if you shop at Tesco, you're contributing to this for the very simple reason of globalization, because the reason prices are cheap at Tesco is because they're getting stuff from China. But so too, China is getting your jobs. So you're saving 10 cents on a loaf of bread at Tesco or some plastic manufactured new knob at Tesco. Meanwhile, you're losing 20 cents in wages as your job is now being outsourced to China and the wages are being pressed down. So the more you shop at Tesco, the more you're really killing yourself. It's consumer suicide on an epic scale. Tesco's the middleman. Tesco is the hangman. They should call themselves Hangman Shopping Center. They're hanging people every day. And this group, Tesco Spy Chips, they're against Tesco. No,
it's boycotttesco.co.uk.
I don't care what the name of it is.
Boycotttesco.com.
Whatever I say it is.
Boycotttesco.com. They're against the radio frequency ID tags, which Tesco is putting on all, you know, all their stuff, all their goods, which makes sense if they're working with Charles Clark, who has just introduced that anti-colonial law.
Yeah.
So you're no longer allowed to resist colonialism.
Yeah.
Once this new law, this so-called anti-terror law.
Yeah, you make a good point, Stacey, because, okay, Charles Clark is saying you can't criticize colonial oppression. Okay, so you can't, under Clark's new prescription, you can't mention the fact that Palestinians are being oppressed by Israel.
No.
Okay, that will become against the law. And you won't be able to say that Tesco is oppressing people with pernicious, invasive spy chip technology, because that'll be against the law, because Tesco has more rights than you do as an individual. And they're eviscerating and gutting your ability to have a financially independent life. They want you to be an indentured servitude, a servant on the big man farm. And this is happening, you know, the colonialism is happening right here in the UK. It's also in the US. You know, the US, you know, just to digress for a second, you know, we're talking about Tesco and the spy chips and this campaign that's anti-Tesco as being an invasion of a colonial power, the corporate occupation that people, if they're not fighting it, aren't going to find themselves wearing spy chip bracelets and having their bank accounts debited every time Tesco needs to pay their executives another bonus. In Florida, in the U.S., they've revamped the eminent domain law, which is the law that gives people the ability to throw other people off their land if they can make a reason for it. It used to be that if the government wanted to build a railway or a highway, they had eminent domain. Mm-hmm. They could say, look, we're going to move you out of your house. We're going to build a hospital. But now they've changed the law so that if some private developer can make the case that they're going to get more tax revenues by building shopping centers, then they can throw you off your land.
This was actually a Supreme Court decision in the New London versus Kelo case.
Mm-hmm.
And the Supreme Court themselves said that if they're going to bring in more taxes, a private developer can force anybody out of their house. And it's being used a lot in America. It's being used in Florida, as you said, 6,000 black people.
Basically black people, 6,000 in Florida, being thrown off their land to make room for commercial enterprise. Whitey.
On a beachfront property. Honkies.
Yeah, the honkies want to get rid of the blacks in Florida. So they're throwing them off their land using a new law. Just like the whitey got rid of the Indians, you know, 300 years ago, 200 years ago, 250 years ago.
Oh, but you're not allowed to talk about that.
Well, that's a colonial. That's a colonial power. I can't talk about Americans committing genocide against American Indian because that'll be against the law.
No.
Can't talk about American private contractors committing ethnic cleansing in places like Florida and New Orleans. That'll be against the law because I am giving a mention of a colonial power committing terrorist acts in the name of profit.
You can't talk about the American Revolution.
Can't talk about the American Revolution.
You can't talk about the Constitution of America, which the Second Amendment talks about the right to bear arms in order to protect yourself from your government.
Yeah. So the UK law, Charles Clark, is completely against the Constitution, Declaration of Independence of the United States. And how are the blacks in America responding to this, and how are the honkies in the UK responding to this? Well, the honkies in the UK, God bless them, are staging a big anti-Tesco campaign here. They want to get rid of these spy chips. And they got a big website out there. They've linked to Karma Bank. And the website is boycotttesco.com. We suggest you check it out to learn the facts. The Guardian calls Tesco a charmless bully and a bad neighbor who is, quote, generating its own particular brand of loathing. Well, it's a very nice way to say that they're basically fascist pigs. I think it would be a more accurate description. Now, in America, what's happening is that, as we also predicted on this show for weeks now, there is one group in America that I think has the ability to rise up and kick whitey's ass. And we're talking about the black people in America. Black people in America, they survived slavery. They survived Michael Jackson. The black people in America are survivors. The black people in America, in a recent poll conducted by major news organizations, gave George W. Bush an approval rating of 2%. 2% of blacks in America approve of George Bush, and that number is going down. It's an historic poll. A poll has never been done in America that showed this type of result.
Ever. It's never been below a double-digit number.
Now, what I say, and what we have been saying, is directly to the black community in America, it's time to get real. It's time to get your badass self into the mix and show these white honky... Can we say on the show? No? Oh, shoot. How much time?
Well, I'm just noting the time that I'm going to have to bleep it out.
It's time for blacks in America to get real. It's time for blacks in America to kick whitey in the teeth. Kick him out of power.
That's figuratively speaking, of course.
I'm being figurative, of course. I would never suggest that there would be in any way an actual teeth knocking out from the boot of a black man into the mouth of a white man.
See, Mega Man was in court this week from So Solid Crew. Yeah. Remember, his buddy killed some man who was sleeping with his woman,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And Mega Man from So Solid Crew, I think his name is Andrew Vincent or something like that. And he...
Andrew Vincent III. He lives in Devon. And I really am upset about the condition of my associates.
No, but he had to explain in court that when he talks about, you know, clipping people and stuff like that, he's just speaking metaphorically. He doesn't actually mean for his friend to go kill people.
Yeah, that's right. But that, even that kind of speech is, under Clark's new regime, is going to be subject to a visit from the secret police. I mean, the UK is going to have their own version of the Stasi soon.
Yeah.
You know, the East German secret police, they're going to have that in the UK. They're going to be spying on everyone left, right, and center.
What's going to happen to British comedy? We're all going to become, like, humorless, like the Germans.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to go German. You don't find many German comedians working.
No.
Do you?
No, you don't.
Oh, well, this is where the UK is going. German comedy.
No, I'm not going to pay my BBC license fee after that.
Well,
we're all going to become boring...
Well, see, so you've got the blacks in America are good. I think this 2% approval, non-approval rating of Bush is a precursor to a whole new wave of activism in America, in the black community. And I think the message should be quite simple to, take on whitey, take on the honkies. Whitey is the oppressive no-goodnik in society. Whitey needs to be raked over the coals, to use another metaphor. And the blacks in America, they've got huge economic clout now to do so after decades and decades of building up a war chest of political power, political influence, artistic power. They've got all you need in America right now in the black community is leadership. You just need a good leader. I think Jesse Jackson, you know, his time is sell-by, fresh date is over. We need someone else to step forward in the black community.
Spike Lee has stepped forward. He's been doing all that, you know, that awful filmmaking in the last few years. But he's making a documentary. He's doing the whole Michael Moore route. He's doing a documentary about the Hurricane Katrina and the Louisiana residents.
Right, that's good. So who else in America, in the black community, can rise up? It's got to be something else brewing in that community, and I'm looking forward to it because I remember back in the 70s when black culture was a lot more outrageous. You know, you had Parliament, Funkadelic, Bootsy Collins, George Clinton. You know, that period was a high watermark for black culture in America, and it was highly political, highly charged. Gil Scott-Heron, one of the probably the first rapper ever on the scene, a highly political, highly charged cultural icon. Let's bring it all back, because Whitey needs to get his ass kicked. Let's be honest about it.
Figuratively speaking,
because he's basically run up this derivatives tab of $250 trillion, and He's going to ask everyone else to pay for the tab. He's doing a runner. Whitey is doing a runner. Whitey racked up $250 trillion worth of debts, and now he's trying to run away. Now, who's left to pay the tab? Everybody else. And there's a large percentage of the people who are going to get screwed over is the black community, because they've been screwed over every year of every decade in American history, really. So, you know, I look forward to this happening.
I want to follow up on one thing you said. Tesco is, you know, pushing down wages.
Yeah.
Mervyn King also said, when he was talking about the economy, he says, Ross Walker is quoted. He's part of this Bank of England. He's an economist at the Royal Bank of Scotland. He played down the increase in jobless claims, arguing that the record levels of employment, despite the rising jobless claims, suggest migrants to Britain may be taking up more jobs and displacing local workers who are eligible then for unemployment, which is why the unemployment rates are going up, yet the employment rates are going up. So people are coming in from Eastern Europe, taking your jobs for a fraction of the cost. But at the same time, Tony Blair says, you know, get over it. This is globalization. Mm. Just become smarter. Educate yourself. The EU, however, this week, issued a warning saying China is aggressively moving into IT and these knowledge economy. So your wages are going down no matter what. Even if you study and go to university to get a knowledge job of writing code, say, well, there are 2 million Chinese graduates a year doing the same thing, and they're still going to be able to work for $4 a day.
I had this image of Tony Blair on the beach in Sri Lanka with the tsunami coming ashore with a whistle around his neck. And a life preserver on, saying, come on, everyone, let's learn how to swim.
Yeah.
Well, Tony, it's past that. There's a tsunami of cheap labor coming, and it's not about teaching people in Britain how to swim. It's about the people of Britain kicking you out of office and putting somebody responsible in government.
Yeah, somebody should be telling you how to survive, because the fact is, when they say get over it, and, you know, this is globalization, stop being an idiot, is basically they're telling you, you're going to have to take a 50% cut in your wage, at least.
Yeah, that's what Tony Blair is saying. Get over it. You're now a lot broker than you were. Your job, your wages are collapsing. Get over it. You know, we're all making out like bandits on the top end of the economy, and we don't care because we're not serving you, the people. We serve the corporations who fund our campaigns and keep us in office. Get over it. And it's irresponsible, and the people in America, I think, need to reach into the black community, find a leader who's going to represent the black community and everybody in America, and put him up there to run for president. There's never been, in my opinion, a greater chance for a black president than right now. All a black candidate has to do right now is get up and say, the current leadership is completely worthless, and the first thing we need to do to straighten house is get a complete slate cleaning at the White House, and we need to represent the people. No people in this country have been more abused than the black community. First, order number one is to straighten that situation out. Order number two, give Palestinians a state to quell the problems in the Mideast that led to Saddam Hussein, that led to the illegal invasion, that led to Tony Blair cooking the books, that led to Tony Blair cooking the law system, that led to Tony Blair selling out to the corporations, that led to the deaths in Iraq of UK soldiers for corporate agenda. There's no patriotic duty in what they were doing. They're simply out there marketing. They're marketing brand managers for Tesco in the Iraq, and they died in the line of marketing. That's what happened. They were stacking shelves, basically, with propaganda and lies in the Green Zone Tesco shop of the imagination and got gunned down for the benefit of the corporate agenda. The people, the soldiers in America who died in Iraq, they're not patriots. They're suckers. You know, you don't need to know any more than the fact that when a lot of these soldiers landed in Baghdad, they were besieged by these same banking insurance criminals trying to get them to buy off on crap insurance and life insurance policies. Remember that story?
Yeah. And finally, Donald Rumsfeld actually had to force them out after too many of they were disgruntled customers. But they were besieged, and many of U.S. soldiers were sold faulty, over-expensive, really bad life insurance policies.
Is that, are you being patriotic by serving your country, or are you being a sucker? You mean you're just cannon fodder for the insurance companies and the banking industry? There's no political agenda at all in Iraq other than to serve the interests of the corporate agenda. There's plenty of hotspots in the world that would benefit by benign kind of intervention by a major power like America to do some good. Oh, by the way, this one happens to have the second or third biggest oil reserves in the planet. This is why we're so concerned about Iraqis. That's hogwash. They're concerned about themselves. And, you know, that's. Did you hear about, for example, this in New York, this terror tip for the rich? Terror tip for the rich. Well, if you need some proof that there's a neo-feudal movement in the works, the rich are seceding from society, this story should disabuse you of your misinformation. Apparently, in New York City, there was an email circulated amongst something called the Corporate Security Network that informed rich people an hour and a half before Bloomberg made his announcement that there was a potential security threat in New York, that there was a security threat in New York, and that they should take precautions. The city's rich and well-connected were tipped off to last week's subway terror days before the average New Yorkers, the Daily News has learned of at least two emails. Okay, so one went out 90 minutes before Bloomberg, then one went out even days before that. They reveal a purported plot against the New York City subway system. And this has been confirmed by the New York City Police Department, and who goes on to say that I've just received the most disturbing call from one of my oldest friends from a growing up in Washington, this email began, and he called to elaborate on what they perceived to be a threat. A second email said, my father works at the Homeland Security in a very high position, and he receives security briefings, and he told me that there's going to be a big security breach. So here you've got insiders and cronies. You know, the Bush administration is run now by insiders and cronies. They've got this new Supreme Court nomination, some chick who worked at Bush's office in Texas for a while, who's now going to be on the Supreme Court. She's another example of cronyism at its worst. Well, apparently these people are hooked up to something called the Corporate Security Network. And the Corporate Security Network is hooked up to the rich in America, who they take the insider dealing from the Homeland Security, put it out to the rich people first, and then they put it out to the general public. So clearly there's a two-tier society in America. The rich, who have access to government, and the poor, who do not. The government is there to serve the rich, and the powerful, and the corporations. It's not there for the people in any way, shape, or form. The people are simply there as consumers to eat and eat and eat and to buy debt, to take on more debt, to make themselves fat, stupid, and indebted, and end up in prison, which, of course, the same corporations own the prison. That's what the job of the poor to do, for them to be there. It's the same in the UK. The UK is similar. It's suffering from the same kind of split in society, where the poor people, what do they have now? The baby ASBOs? This is strictly a device to make the rich richer because they want to keep the poor tied to their feed bags, getting fat on cheap processed food that'll make the sellers of that food rich. They want to keep them drunk for the sellers of the alcohol. They want to keep them high on coke for their so-called war in Afghanistan. The flow of heroin's never been higher into the UK. Is that because the UK and the US's war on drugs in Afghanistan is going well? It is for them. They've never had a bigger crop. People in the UK are strung out on dope. Absolutely, it's helping the sellers of the arms into these territories who are getting rich on your addictions, your fatness, your stupidity. You can't afford college anymore, can't afford university, got top-up fees up the wazoo. It's great for them, it stinks for you. There's two societies going on parallel. You're in probably listening to this show. I doubt you're in the part of society that's getting the benefit from selling you processed food, bad debt, no access to education, so you're going to end up in prison because your kid's got a baby asbos. You know, it's all feeding the 1%. Well, you know, in America, like I said earlier, they got the black population who's had already some experience in open revolt and rebellion, and perhaps they may make that decision again to organize themselves in a way that would express their needs as a democratically protected group in America, and this could happen in the UK as well. But you got to hurry, because if Charles Clark has his way, even you know, talking about civil rights can get you locked up. You know, it's a totalitarian regime by the corporations. All they want you to do is to eat yourself to death. That's the model. It's like they're taking it from China. China went from forced labor to forced consumption. China is communism and capitalism mixed, which ends up with a model called forced consumption. The political elite wants the Chinese people to consume themselves to death because it makes the political elite rich. Same thing in the UK. The UK rich corporations want the UK population to eat themselves to death, take on debt until they kill themselves, and to get drunk and take drugs to kill themselves to make them wealthy. It's the ghetto model. It's the feudal model. It's been with us before. It's happening again. The whole experiment with the Enlightenment apparently has run its course. Now we're back to feudalism. But unfortunately, at the same time, as we talked about at the beginning of this show, the entire world's financial market is in free fall because these feudal lords have greased the skids with $250 trillion worth of IOUs, and now there's no market for these IOUs. So the only thing, I guess, the silver lining there is you might see a lot of toffs on the street begging. I'd like to see that. Stacy.
It'll be just like the Great Depression. Apparently, many analysts in America are saying that this is going to be worse than the Great Depression. And I know during that time, my grandfather, who was a very highly educated man, he was an accountant as well, and he ended up selling apples in New York City.
Meanwhile, as the world's financial systems collapse, the world's ecology continues to collapse, world temperatures keep rising. 2005 apparently is going to be a world record for heat.
The hottest year on record.
Right, but there's no such thing as global warming or climate change. That's all been cooked up by the fanatical loony left. It doesn't really exist, say some who are actually on fire, why they make that statement. Remember that movie with Richard Pryor? Where he has the joke about running around on fire?
Well, he was when he went crazy. Apparently, I think he was like high on drugs, went crazy, and burned himself, and then was running down the street in Chicago or something on fire, and people had to put him out.
Oh, God. Well, here's an interesting story. The U.S. balance of payments. You know, the U.S. has this huge gap in the income. Or I should say, the globe has an income gap, where the amount of money that is collected by America on its foreign investments has, up until recently, been greater than the amount of money that foreigners collect on their American investments, even though the amount of foreign ownership of American assets has never been greater. The income that America gets on its foreign assets has always been greater than the reverse. There's always been a positive cash flow in that sense. However, now, for the first time in history, that number is about to go negative for America, and they're going to be paying more out in revenue on the money they owe on the investments owned by outsiders than the opposite. So this means, again, another nail in America's coffin as a viable economy, because they are going into a position of negative equity and negative cash flow and insolvency as a country. What do you think about that?
That should be made into a song. That was very poetic and very painful.
Well, I remember when the U.S. wanted everyone to join NAFTA, which is joining Canada and Mexico and America into one big trade zone.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, they've recently lobbied to get CAFTA.
Uh-huh. And they got that through.
Yeah, because, you know, trade is good, right? Trade's great. Trade is the mother's milk of global happiness.
Yeah.
Well, apparently, NAFTA's falling apart because Canada and Mexico are accusing the U.S. of flouting the rules.
Oh, no. America wouldn't do that, would they?
Mm-hmm. Canada and Mexico are escalating their allegations that the U.S. is flouting the terms of NAFTA. And Canada is going to, quote, drop the safe language of diplomacy. Then they're going to start calling Bush a honky. I'd like to see the Prime Minister of Canada call Bush a honky.
This is something I've noticed, though, lately, that a lot of presidents, prime ministers, diplomats, ambassadors, they're starting to drop the language of diplomacy. It's all becoming some giant Fox News set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's becoming a street brawl. The global economy is becoming a street brawl more and more, because more of the global economy is happening on the street.
It's the ghetto in Wall Street. It's all merging. It's becoming a giant ghetto.
Yeah, I mean, having worked on Wall Street myself, you know, I tell people that Wall Street is not different than the ghetto or Harlem. I used to live in Harlem, and I worked on Wall Street, so I know both sides, and they're very similar. You know, the people who work on Wall Street commit knivings and gun-toting slash and burn, and they execute trades, and there's clients are carried out on a stretcher, and stocks get bloodied. You know, it's a very violent environment, not unlike Uptown in Harlem. And it's the same kind of mentality, really, with the street battles and the gang battles you find around the world. It's the same gang battles you find in the city and on Wall Street. And the language, however, is language that is heavily cloaked in ways that the average person listening in to the conversation doesn't really know what's going on. But if you know how to decode the language, you can hear that there's a tremendous violence going on. And, for example, we know this from the Citigroup trade in the European bond market a few weeks ago, where there was that email circulated within Citigroup where the traders were basically saying that the European bond market, you know, was going to be easily screwed over, and they wanted to manipulate it and ransack it and crush it. And this is what they did, and they were able to basically do a smash and grab, and they held up that market, not unlike any ghetto where the corner liquor store gets held up at gunpoint. Citigroup basically held up the European bond market at the point of a massive derivatives trade, and they pocketed a lot of money for themselves, and they ended up paying a fee, a little fine, for this. But did it stop them? You know, they got a very... from continuing on? Does it stop Citigroup and Goldman Sachs and all these other banks from floating trillions of dollars worth of IOUs, derivatives, with no place to put them when the interest rates start going up, which they are now going up because they've destroyed the collateral, which is nature? When you get rid of the nature, get rid of nature, the value of nature goes up. This is what's driving the interest rates. As far as I can see, the interest rates are being driven higher because the natural resources upon which we all rely on to survive are becoming scarcer because they're being destroyed to feed the pockets of these bankers. You know, what is clear-cutting in the Amazon basin do? I mean, a lot of those trees that are cut down end up being made into chopsticks and toothpicks. Is that really necessary? Well, if you're a chopstick and toothpick salesman, it is. Is there anyone going to go in there and say, maybe we don't need all these trillions of dollars worth of irreplaceable forests being cut down for chopsticks and toothpicks? No, there's nobody doing that. Why? Because they're getting a bribe. They're getting a fee. This ecosystem of crime, battling the ecosystem of nature, and the crime syndicates have destroyed so much nature now that the price of nature is going up sharply, which is forcing an inflationary spiral, which is forcing interest rates to go up, which is forcing the ecology of the global finance markets to implode. This is what's happening. That's why Revco has stopped trading. This is all tied together. This the ecosystem of finance and the ecosystem of ecology are basically one big ecosystem. And when you, you know, if you take the heart out of your body, your whole body stops working, doesn't it? You just can't selectively remove your heart and expect to walk down the street unaffected. Similarly, you just can't take a big derivative trader out of the game and expect the rest of the game to just continue on. It has, for a few years, been able to go on because the banks, in cahoots with the central banks, have simply printed more money, made money artificially cheap, which allows them to just go on this massive Ponzi scheme and print more and more bad paper. But now the proof is the game is up because the ecology cannot support any more pressure. People are now, you've got how many, 50 million immigrants due to climate change and global warming? That's a huge cost. Who's going to suck up the immigration of these people because of the greed of the people at the top, the corporate and banking infrastructure? Who's going to suck up all those immigrants due to climate change and global warming? The U.S.? Is the U.S. going to take in 50 million climate change immigrants? Do you see that happening, Stacey?
I certainly don't. I certainly don't see the Britain either.
Meanwhile,
accepting it.
In the U.S., this is another part of the trend toward the bankruptcy and insolvency of every American citizen. This new study says that U.S. consumers use credit cards for basic costs. Low and middle income families now rely on credit cards to pay for basic living expenses, car repairs, medical expenses, food. So now the transition from the average American to becoming an indentured servant is well underway. The savings rate in America now has gone negative.
Mm-hmm.
There is no savings rate in America.
No.
There is debt, and only debt. No. It's a government buying for the indebted.
And from Monday, actually, Americans are no longer allowed to declare bankruptcy.
That's right.
I mean, they are, but it's a really, really expensive and improbable proposition at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So from Monday, you're going to see a lot of stuff happen.
Yeah, the global financial system will continue to deteriorate.
Yeah, at the perfect time, because they know that the chump pension holders aren't going to be able to go away because they can't declare bankruptcy now. They've got to pay.
Mm. That's right. So they're going to just take their pension.
Yeah, exactly. They're going to take their pension and run for Shanghai.
Because usually the pension accounts were insulated again from creditors.
Yeah.
I would imagine under this new law, pension accounts and 401k and IRAs and these types of accounts will now be able to be dipped into by the creditors.
Yeah, and they're all yeah, exactly. But they've just dumped the pensions onto the government, i.e., the citizen. And if you have mass financial collapse, nobody's working. There is no tax collection.
Well, I thought this was interesting. In MarketWatch, there was a commentary looking back from next year, how the boom ended. This is looking back and the symptoms of how we got into the financial dire straits. He brings up some interesting statistics. Most Americans, by the end of 2005, have a federal debt per U.S. household of more than $450,000.
So the federal debt amounts to $450,000 per household.
That's correct.
That's
right.
Considering the average U.S. salary is something like $33,000, the average household income.
Mm.
That's about, what, 11 years?
Mm.
The next 11 years solid of 100% of your income, pre-tax.
That's right. The prime cause was trying to do too much at once for this massive liquidation of America. And they go back to what Lyndon Johnson tried to do in the 60s and the 70s by lying to the American people about the true cost of the Vietnam War, which was about $121 billion. LBJ tried to pursue his Great Society domestic program while fighting the war, so-called guns and butter. They say, so too, George Bush has tried to pursue his war in Iraq with a total cost of more than $200 billion. And simultaneously spend $150 billion to rebuild the Gulf Coast after the catastrophes of Hurricane Katrina and Rita. The consequence was that the federal debt surged from $7.3 trillion in 2004 to $8.2 trillion by 2006. It appears to be heading in that direction.
And the U.S. economy per year is about $10 trillion.
Yeah, so I guess that's where you get that $450,000 per household debt. It relates to that $8.2 trillion in federal debt.
Mm-hmm.
To combat, the Federal Reserve Board raised interest rates from 5% to 5.5%. As a result, mortgage rates surged, turning the housing boom into the housing bust and bringing back memories of the high-tech crash of 2000-2001. Right, so as the debt balloons, of course, to refinance debt means you're competing for money, which means you're putting pressure for money, which means you're putting pressure on interest rates on the upside. Higher rates are the poison of mortgage payments, and so you've got a big housing collapse. And as the housing prices collapse, the fabulous sense of wealth that homeowners had been feeling blows away, and they stop consuming. So now your consuming market blows up. So with both consumer spending and consumer confidence in decline, President Bush's rating continued to drop. And China is on the sidelines licking their lips because they own $200 billion of U.S. debt. Japan has $700 billion of U.S. debt. And OPEC has $50 billion of U.S. debt. So these are the creditors that will move in. Really, the wholesale liquidation of America begins, the creditors will begin to move in and they'll put America on eBay. America will appear on eBay from China, Japan, and OPEC will try to auction America off on eBay.
That would be funny because China, you can't write the word democracy, but you can buy America online.
I have a theory that in 5 years' time, there will be nothing left geographically of America. There will only be a 24-hour cable TV station that will show 24 hours a day of Ronald Reagan speeches. It will be the America Channel. But there will be no geographic location called America. It will just be a lot of Chinese people and Japanese people and OPEC.
You think China will redesign the globe?
Yeah.
The maps?
Yeah.
Well, it's not too far. You know, it is...
And when people talk about America, they'll say, yes, I just saw America last night. It was the speech from 1984. That was great on the America Channel.
Yeah.
But there won't be any physical location, America.
No.
And...
They'll be the because it'll be a free trade zone for China. They're going to swap quickly because now America's collapsed. They're just going to go in there, build giant barbed wire fences, disconnect the internet from these people, and put all these Americans into slave camps and start working to make plastic toys for Chinese people.
Do you think most Americans would even notice?
Probably not. As long as you gave them an SUV.
If you just gave them a donut, they'd be happy. Americans work cheap. They work for donuts.
Okay, well, we'll be back next week when we'll let you know whether or not the economy is still here. You'll probably notice if it's not.
Undoubtedly, you will have noticed if what we're saying continues to accelerate at the pace that we're suggesting it will.
And hopefully it will, otherwise our credibility will be completely not.
Well, I mean, whether it happens this week or next month or within 6 months, it's happening. The liquidation of the global financial markets is happening. It's underway. So I think that there's a possibility it'll seize up and there'll be a massive day of reckoning where you won't have any transactions at all and people, whatever they have in their pocket at that particular moment will be their net worth.
There you go. Okay.
By the way, can I borrow $5?
See you next time.
Bye.